I want to get into our featured story, which is about this imminent war with Iran. I've been meaning to talk about this for a while, and it's been a minute. Our featured story is about how we are rapidly hurtling towards a second wave of attacks against Iran. And it appears to me that this is inevitable and unavoidable. It is almost certainly going to happen. It was announced today by President Trump that if Iran does not come to the negotiating table and give up on basically everything, give up their nuclear centrifuges, give up their enriched uranium, give up their ability to enrich uranium, give up their longer-range missiles, give up their support for the proxies, Trump is effectively demanding a complete and total surrender, or else Trump says we are going to war with Iran. And that menu of options to strike Iran now consists in a much wider range of possibilities. They now say that the Trump administration is considering special operations raids on the ground. So we're not just talking about airstrikes this time. We're not just talking about bombing government buildings and missiles and nuclear sites. The Pentagon is now talking about American soldiers inside Iran physically dismantling Iranian infrastructure. And to understand how we got here, we do have to back it up a little bit. And we'll reiterate some of the things that I hope you already know about the whole situation. So, of course, Donald Trump was basically elected for this exact purpose. I said this in 2024. The reason that Trump won the election, the reason that Trump became so popular, they let him. You do understand this, right? Trump was allowed to become popular. He was allowed to win the election. They stood down. Whatever these forces are that conspired against him in 2016 and 2020, they stood down and they let him become successful. And this was telegraphed years in advance. It was telegraphed after October 7th. Because after Israel was attacked on that day, a number of powerful American Jews, maybe you could say a majority of American Jews in general, shifted to the right. Why? Because they saw the reality of what is happening on the ground in Israel, which is that there is a contingent of Palestinian Muslims that have a genocidal hatred for Israel. That's the perception. That's the narrative. On that day, this performance, which is October 7th, there was this theater, a stage play put on for world Jewry. And the moral of that story was, Israelis are not safe. Jews are not safe. We have to stick together. We need to be cohesive. And Jews in America that day were mugged by reality. They realized the world is still a dangerous place for Jews. And feeling vulnerable, they became more right-wing, seeking security through militarism, through tribalism. What's more, they saw the American political left sympathize with the Palestinians. And they were alienated from the political left by this. They saw that the far left, the progressives, the radicals, immediately, almost immediately sympathized not just with the Palestinian cause, but with Hamas. And this alienated many Jews who would have considered themselves liberals or Democrats. And so there was a shift rightward among all American Jews. I don't care how left-wing or liberal they were, they all shifted somewhat to the right after this day. Being very powerful in America, this had a knock-on effect. It made America more right-wing. If the liberal Jews running the media and academia and the lawyers and the donors and the ones in Silicon Valley and Wall Street, if they all became more right-wing that day, then they used their influence to make America more right-wing. America did not have an epiphany about wokeness. These people did. And so they stood down and they allowed Trump to win. Why? Because they knew that Trump was a vehicle for Israel's revenge. Whereas, left-wing protesters and Democrats and liberals and the Biden administration were huffing and puffing all the way, trying to restrain Israel, criticizing Israel, trying to get them to stop their campaign. Powerful American Jews knew that if a Republican was elected to the White House and to the rest of the government, that they would allow Israel to take the gloves off and would actually supplement their efforts in a major way. So once you understand this, you realize that war with Iran in the Trump administration is a feature, not a bug. I know there are a lot of Trump supporters that believe that Trump's pro-Israel politics is a compartmentalized aspect of his program. They say that he's got lots of different policies, and some we like and some we don't like, and this idea that he wants to support a war with Iran, well, that's just one among other policies. And they also have this idea that they have this relationship with the president, that the president is listening to them, reading their tweets, receptive to their outrage, their emotions. And there was this idea among very naive and stupid people that might run certain Twitter accounts like AF Post, among other people like Andrew Torba, who might be named Mike Cernovich. And these naive and foolish and stupid people thought that we could try to support the good and criticize the bad, that we could sort of work with this arrangement. They thought that those pro-Israel politics were just sort of part of the deal, and maybe they could be mitigated in some way through pressure on social media. Well, I hate to tell you this, but that is absolutely not how it works. Trump was given hundreds of millions of dollars by donors with the understanding that the only way that he could unlock that money is if he gave them assurances that he would go to war with Iran. He is not elected and going to war. He was elected to go to war. You understand the difference? This is why we have a Trump administration. Actually, it's the complete opposite. The reason he is elected is to go to war with Iran, and all of the other things are ancillary. The trade war, the deportations, all the rest of it, those are the stocking stuffers. Those are the bonuses. War with Iran is the big ticket item that got him into the White House in the first place. And that's why he's there. He is a Trojan horse. And the purpose of the horse is not to give a gift to the city and the base. The purpose of the horse is to get the soldiers inside the city walls where they need to be. The purpose is to get Mike Waltz in the National Security Council. The purpose is to get all of these Zionists inside the Pentagon, inside the State Department, so that they can carry out their mission, which has been the case for a long time. And so as quickly as Trump was elected, this started. Netanyahu began visiting the White House, demanding a war with Iran. Trump's own personnel started pushing for a war with Iran. Trump attempted to negotiate with Iran, because I think that in his heart of hearts, Trump is against a war ideologically. But ultimately, this was in vain because the table had already been set. Long ago, the Israelis and the Zionists and the Jews poisoned Trump's relationship personally with the nation of Iran by pushing him to assassinate Soleimani, by pushing him to rip up the Iran nuclear deal, by branding the Iranian Revolutionary Guard a terrorist group. They had already poisoned the well. They had alienated this particular president from Iran. They knew that a rapprochement would be impossible. They knew that diplomacy would be impossible because the seeds of distrust had been sowed a long time ago. And their insurance policy was they fabricated this myth that Iran was trying to assassinate Trump. Remember that? During the election, the Israel-infiltrated FBI, the Israel-infiltrated Pentagon, put out false intelligence that said that Iran was trying to kill Trump. And so if the well was already not sufficiently poisoned by the behavior of the first Trump administration, surely as Trump was propelled into the nomination and then the White House a third time, second or third time, respectively, that little assassination plot, that little piece of propaganda, that would do the trick. That would tip it in and seal the deal. And so Trump attempted to negotiate with Iran, attempted to pick up where Biden left off and normalize relations with Iran. But the damage was already done. And we were already on a collision course with this country. Throughout the first half of the last year, the Israelis propagandized the world about an imminent Iranian nuclear capability. Eventually, they launched their preemptive attack. They could not defend themselves, and they knew they couldn't. And that is how they were able to draw the United States into the conflict. And we bombed Iran's nuclear program. Now, again, a lot of Trump fans and Trump shills saw that first strike on Iran, and they lied to themselves, and they coped. And they said, hey, trust the plan. They said, this is five-dimensional chess. Once the whole thing was over, they wiped their brow, they breathed a sigh of relief, and they said, see, Trump isn't a neocon. He just bombed Iran once, and now it's over. Now it's all finished. They said, actually, it was genius. It was ideal. They said Trump was able to disable Iran's nuclear hedge. He was able to do it without committing us into a war. It was a clean, effective operation. And now we don't have to go to war with Iran. We've neutralized their program and we could focus our attention elsewhere. That's what they all told themselves. And that was the cope. But here was the problem with that line of thinking, okay? Iran's nuclear problem was never the problem, ever. The real problem at the heart of this antagonism between Israel and Iran is that Israel cannot tolerate the existence of a large, powerful Islamist state that does not recognize Israel. That is the fundamental problem. As long as Iran is Islamist, as long as it is powerful enough to check Israel's hegemony, as long as it influences other Islamist groups in the Middle East that challenges Israel's hegemony in the region, and as long as they will not normalize those relations, then Israel wants this country destroyed. That is Israel's mortal enemy, just as it was Bashar al-Assad before that and Saddam Hussein before that. So Israel wants to utterly annihilate Iran. It is for this reason that Iran has built up a nuclear hedge. That was actually the reaction. The first move is that the United States and Israel supported both sides in the Iran-Iraq war. The United States and Israel collaborated to overthrow Saddam Hussein. The United States and Israel collaborated to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. The reaction to this policy, the reaction to this grand strategy was to create a nuclear hedge. And this, unfortunately, puts Iran between a rock and a hard place. No pun intended. If they don't have a nuclear hedge, they are vulnerable. If they do have one, then that creates a pretext for Israel to convince the United States to go to war with them. But understand, the U.S. interest in Iran is limited. In Israel, it is unlimited. Israel wants Iran to be wiped out. Therefore, Iran has a nuclear hedge. As long as Iran has a nuclear hedge, we need to ensure that they do not become a nuclear armed state. That's a limited objective. We don't necessarily mind in itself that they have allies in Iraq, that they have allies in Syria or in Lebanon or Yemen, not by itself. We don't necessarily have a problem that Iran has missile systems, not in itself. We do have a problem that Iran has nuclear centrifuges. Because as the global hegemon, one of our real grand strategy objectives is to prevent the proliferation of WMDs. Because that is the only way that a revisionist middle power could ever threaten us. Iran cannot, would not ever threaten us with conventional capabilities. But any country with a limited nuclear, biological, or chemical arsenal could theoretically threaten the United States, either on our homeland through terrorism, or if we needed to intervene in some region by having an asymmetrical deterrent against U.S. intervention. So understand that is how the table is set. Israel wants to destroy Iran. So Iran has a nuclear hedge. That nuclear hedge invites intense U.S. scrutiny. What does this have to do with the war last year? Well, Israel and even Trump himself, the United States has been driven into a confrontation with Iran over the nuclear program. That has been the pretext. That has been the bait. In the first term, we were told that we have to rip up the nuclear deal because that will not sufficiently constrain Iran from getting a bomb. We were told that we had to kill Soleimani and do these things because Iran is nuclearizing and they're this anti-American nation seeking a nuclear bomb. Last year, the pretext for Israel's preemptive strike was that they had a nuke. And what was the U.S. strike on Iran? What was Midnight Hammer? The U.S. strike on Iran last year was a limited strike on Iran's nuclear centrifuges. But understand it in terms of the bigger picture. From our perspective, American Trump supporters were saying, well, the day is saved. We took out their nukes, and now they no longer pose a threat. Because again, that's our limited objective. That is the narrow way in which we find ourselves at odds intrinsically with Iran. And so with the nuclear hedge off the table, people say we no longer need to engage Iran, confront Iran. There's no longer a reason to engage Iran with hostilities. It's over because their nuclear program could not easily be reconstituted. So from our perspective, people said the day is saved, the issue is resolved, and now we're all going to live happily ever after. But again, that fundamentally misunderstands that there are three parties. There are three variables in this equation. What we did in June could be perceived one way as a one-and-done strike that eliminated the one thing we were worried about. But think about it from Israel's perspective. If Israel's goal is to topple Iran, taking out their nuclear program is only the first step. The nuclear program is what protects Iran. If Iran is engaged in a once-and-for-all battle, an existential battle for its existence, then Iran could always pull that trigger. That's their dead man switch, so to speak. They get a nuclear bomb, and then they become a porcupine. If they find themselves up against a wall, the U.S. and Israel breathing down their neck, ready to slit their throat, Iran can race towards a bomb and deter any major attack. And so with that nuclear hedge offline, it leaves them vulnerable. Israel's not finished. Because again, Israel's problem is not that Iran has nukes. Their problem is that Iran's nukes protect Iran from being destroyed. Their goal is to destroy Iran. So once the nuclear program was destroyed, and Israel was bombing other sites also, missile launch platforms and government targets and decapitation strike on the military leadership, Israel then began to plan their next move, which is to further degrade Iran's other defenses, its proxies, and its missile program. The nuclear hedge is only the biggest deterrent that Iran has. Its other deterrent is that if Iran is attacked, they can launch missiles at Israel and blot out the sky with ballistic missiles, which would be ruinous for Israel. It would be painful. Their other deterrent is that if Iran is utterly destroyed, all their missiles, their nuclear hedge, their military is neutralized, well, then Iran's proxies, which are dispersed, could launch a second strike. If for whatever reason, Iran cannot race towards a nuke, cannot hit the button and launch missiles at Israel from Iran, cannot retaliate in a conventional way, well, then they can rely on Hezbollah in Iraq, Hezbollah in Lebanon, militias in Syria, the Houthis in Yemen, Hamas to bomb Israel. And Israel cannot launch a regional attack on everybody everywhere. You can't take out all of Iran's missiles and all of Iran's air defense and Iran's leadership and take out the 90,000 Kataib Hezbollah in Iraq and take out the 200,000 Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon and take out the Houthis. You can't do it everywhere at all times. We're now talking about millions of soldiers here and probably thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of different kinds of rockets and missiles. They couldn't do it. So the United States said, oh, we're done. We bombed their nukes. We're good. They're not a threat to us. Israel said, phase one complete. They said, now the runway has been cleared. Now that the worst deterrent has been taken offline, now we can degrade their other capabilities. And so Israel began to regroup and plan and prepare to then launch attacks on Iran's missiles, on Iran's proxies, on its military leadership or civilian leadership. That brings us to where we are right now. Now, we're 7 months out after that initial war. And I said this the day after that initial war. After we bomb Iran, after Israel bombs Iran, what is Iran's reaction? We thought about America's perspective. We thought about Israel's perspective. What is Iran's perspective? Well, it's very important to consider that the United States was in negotiations with Iran when that war started. And when the war started, the United States came out and said it was a fake out. Steve Witkoff and Trump went on TV and said, we didn't really intend to make a deal with Iran. We were negotiating with them so that they would lower their guard and that they would not expect or anticipate a preemptive strike. And that allowed Israel to have that element of surprise. And that also then allowed us to bomb them. Okay, so if you're Iran, what is your reaction to all of this? Well, you realize that you cannot trust the United States. In particular, you cannot trust Trump. They say that if we engage with the United States in diplomacy, they're going to pull the rug out from under us. We're lowering our guard. We're vulnerable. If we think we're going to get a deal, in the end, we get attacked. And the United States is either unable or unwilling to restrain Israel. The tail seems to wag the dog. The United States seems to be actually the junior partner in Israel's foreign policy. So what does Iran do in response to the war? Well, immediately they send out all of the weapons inspectors from the IAEA. Immediately they cut off all diplomacy with the United States. And then their next step is to reconstitute all of their defensive capabilities. They are now effectively in a war with Israel and the United States. That is how they see it. So if you're in a war with the United States, what's your only deterrent? A nuclear bomb. So what do you think Iran did? I imagine they started moving their highly enriched uranium, building new enrichment facilities. They have apparently undisclosed sites that are even deeper inside the mountains, even deeper underground than the ones that we knew about at Fordo and at Natanz. So Israel has their highly enriched uranium. They have other centrifuges. They have other sites we don't know about. And the word is they start to reconstitute their deterrent capabilities. They start to reconstitute their nuclear hedge to deter the United States. They start to reconstitute their missiles as a deterrent against Israel. Nukes deter the U.S., missiles and a nuke deter Israel. So Iran goes right back to work, building their missiles, building their nukes, furnishing their proxies like Hezbollah with billions of dollars so that they can rearm themselves. Now, what does Israel say? Well, if Israel is trying to destroy Iran, they cannot allow Iran to reconstitute. So you know that eventually, on a long enough timeline, Israel, and actually sooner rather than later, Israel's going to want to go back to war. If Israel's goal is to destroy Iran, it defeats the purpose of degrading their defenses if you're just going to wait for them to build them back up. Israel wants to destroy Iran, so we got to take out their defenses. You take out their defenses so that you can make a decisive strike. But if you wait too long, then Iran is simply just going to rebuild because they're a big and a rich country. They're an oil-rich country with a huge population. They are fortified. This country is built for a war with Israel. It's quite literally like the topography was built for a war. It's mountainous. It's very difficult terrain. It's three times the size of Iraq. Huge population. So Israel's next move is they're not going to wait for Iran to do this. They are very soon going to want to go back in. And that will be the pretext. They will say it will have all been in vain. And actually, it will have ensured that Iran gets the bomb if we do nothing now. The way that the Israelis are going to spin it is we attacked Iran once. That set them on the path inexorably to rearmament, not just with missiles, but also with nukes. We have to hit them again. It's a necessity. Otherwise, the first one, again, it was not only a waste, it would have accelerated the timeline for Iran to nuclearize. And it's hard to argue with this. Now, for the United States, how do we respond now to Iran's rearmament? Well, we have to assume, surely, that Iran is going to build a nuke. We must assume this. They have ejected the inspectors. They have ejected the IAEA. We know that we did not fully destroy their centrifuges, their stockpile of enriched uranium. And now they won't negotiate with us. By tricking them and bombing them, we have spoiled any potential rapport or trust. They won't talk to us. So we must assume that if they're not talking and they're rearming, that there is this ticking timeline where they're going to build a nuclear bomb. Now the United States is faced with exactly two possibilities. If Iran is building another nuclear hedge, then we can either negotiate with them to give it up, or we have to bomb them again. Once again, those are our only two options. There is no third option where we let them get the bomb. I know that I have said in the past that I think that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but I'm telling you, the Pentagon cannot accept this. That is just U.S. strategy. Thinking in terms of the logic of international affairs, the United States cannot accept Iran having a bomb. We must assume they're building one. We must assume they are hell-bent on building one after that war. So you have two options. You can either blow up their bomb or you can negotiate. Well, the reason why that war last year was such a mistake is because Israel got us to bomb Iran directly. That had never happened before. We have killed their officials outside Iran. We have attacked their proxies outside of their country, not on their soil. But by bombing their soil in a sneak attack during negotiations, Israel made us get our hands dirty. They made us assume responsibility, assume the liability and the blame for all of it. That is why this was a great success for Israel. In that moment, we bought the war. And why is that the case? Because after we sneak Iran, we no longer can credibly go to them as a neutral party. We can't go to them and say, hey, we're cutting out Israel. We want to make a deal. You can trust us. We don't want to destroy you. By bombing them, we got our hands dirty. We got blood on our hands. We deceived them. We sabotaged any potential trust, any potential relationship. We demonstrated that we are unable to restrain Israel, that they are in fact in control of our foreign policy. And so what does that mean? It means that that second option of diplomacy is probably permanently foreclosed. At the minimum, it is extraordinarily difficult. It's just not going to happen. So Iran doesn't trust us. They don't want to negotiate. The United States is making these maximalist demands. We're basically telling Iran, you have to make yourself completely defenseless or else we will destroy you. They will never agree to that. They can't make themselves defenseless because, again, the reason they have pursued these weapon systems is because Israel wants them to be destroyed. So it has put us in an unavoidable, you see logically now how we are in an unavoidable collision course because Iran is rearming. They won't negotiate. We can't let them rearm. And although we might want to negotiate, that has been sabotaged. There's also a very short timeline, because the longer we wait, mathematically, the more we have to assume that they have rebuilt. So this puts us, like I said it in 2024, I said it in 2025, we are trapped in this reciprocal exchange for which there is no off-ramp. You think that we live in a world where we have infinite choices, and there's so many different permutations, so many different possibilities of where things can go. But what people don't realize is that we have been making decisions for 20 years. And every time we make a decision, we close off an entire tree of possibilities. That's the unseen aspect of all this. A lot of people saw last year, well, we bombed Iran and we did it one time and it wasn't a big deal. What they did not see is how that has now tied our hands, and we are now being sent inexorably on really only one possible course of action. And it's not to say that it is impossible that we're able to negotiate, but it is extraordinarily unlikely and difficult. You see, Trump gets reelected. It was doomed from the start. Why? Because he killed Qasem Soleimani, because he went to war with the IRGC, because he ripped up the original nuclear deal. And they knew that. The Israelis knew that. They set us up. They installed the one man in the world who literally cannot make a deal with Iran. They installed the one man that murdered their hero, the one man that ripped up the original deal that we now have to reconstitute, the one man that they convinced Iran is trying to kill. So that was a poison pill. They put this guy in charge in the middle of this crisis because they knew he could not, would not make a deal. They knew they could get him, they could bait him into giving them this layup and bombing Iran. And once they did, now we are set on this course. And that brings us to the events of the past 3 weeks. Netanyahu goes to Mar-a-Lago on December 29th, and he's begging Trump to bomb Iran. Specifically, what is he saying? He's begging Trump to bomb their missiles. So we took out the nukes, check. Now, Netanyahu is worried about their other deterrent, their ballistic missiles. Because, of course, Israel cannot topple their government without Iran lobbing 1,000 missiles at Israel every single day for a week. So Israel has to take out now the missiles. So he goes to Trump and begs him, can we get the green light for a second wave of strikes? Coincidentally, a week later, one of Iran's state-sponsored banks collapses and there are massive protests. And as we talked about, these are not organic protests. This is a color revolution. Eyewitnesses, according to the Financial Times, said they saw men dressed in all black, armed with automatic rifles, storming government buildings. These are Israel and CIA-backed proxies, probably Kurdish in origin, if I had to guess. Other separatists, other types of operatives. But then you have this color revolution. You have this insurrection backed by Israel and the CIA. Trump goes on Twitter and says help is on the way. He's preparing to strike Iran a second time, and this time attacking their internal security service and their missiles. At the last minute, he calls off the strike. Why? Because at this point in time, we had just kidnapped Maduro. And so all of our forces are either in the Pacific or in the Caribbean. We only had a handful of ships in the Middle East. What does that mean? It means we're missing an air force. We're missing key radar and early warning systems. We don't have a ton of personnel. And so if we strike Iran during the protests and it doesn't topple the regime, then they get to lob 100 missiles at Israel and missiles at U.S. bases without a warning, and we will not be able to sufficiently protect those targets. And that means that Israel's getting pounded. That means that U.S. bases in Iraqi Kurdistan, in Damascus, in Jordan, in Al Udeid, they're all being bombed, or they could all be potential targets. And so at the last minute, Trump pulls back the strike and says, we need to wait to have more power in the region. We need to evacuate certain personnel. We need to get ready. And that's exactly what he did. So he diverted the USS Abraham Lincoln from the Pacific to the Middle East. He sent in a number of refueling aircraft, military transport aircraft, all kinds of strike aircraft, fighter jets, moving THAAD systems, moving anti-missile systems into the region, deploying tens of thousands of personnel, evacuating other personnel in preparation for a protracted wave of attacks against Iran. And that brings us to today. This is our story from the New York Times. This is the latest. It says, quote, President Trump has been presented in recent days with an expanded list of potential military options against Iran aimed at doing further damage to the country's nuclear and missile facilities or weakening Iran's supreme leader. The options go far beyond the proposals that Mr. Trump was considering 2 weeks ago as a means of following through on his promise to stop the killing of protesters by Iranian government security forces. The current set of options even includes the potential for American forces to carry out raids on sites inside Iran. And it comes in a different context now that the protests have been brutally quashed. Mr. Trump has been demanding that Iran take further steps to end its push to build a nuclear weapon and halt its support for proxies that have long targeted Israel and destabilized the Middle East. Mr. Trump has not yet authorized military action or chosen among the options. The president remains open to finding a diplomatic solution, and some officials acknowledge that telegraphing the threats of military action was intended to drive the Iranians into a negotiation. In recent days, he has mulled whether regime change would be a viable option. With Iran, officials remain skeptical that Tehran would accept the conditions the U.S. has outlined. They include a permanent end to all enrichment of uranium, giving up its current nuclear stockpiles, starting with more than 960 pounds of uranium that has been enriched to near bomb-grade levels. The demands go even further and include limits on the range and number of ballistic missiles, an end to all support for proxy groups in the Middle East, including Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis. Agreeing to the missile limits would essentially make it impossible for Iran to strike Israel. Mr. Trump is still weighing the range of options. Among the riskiest would involve secretly sending in U.S. commandos to destroy or badly damage parts of the Iranian nuclear program not already damaged in the U.S. bombing last June. The aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln, armed with F/A-18 attack planes, stealthy F-35 fighter jets, is on station in the Arabian Sea and within striking distance of Iranian targets. The carrier is accompanied by three missile-firing destroyers. The U.S. has already sent a dozen additional F-15E attack planes to the region to strengthen strike aircraft numbers, and the Pentagon has dispatched more Patriot and THAAD air defenses to the region to help protect American troops based there from any retaliatory strike by Iran short and medium-range missiles. Long-range bombers based in the United States that could strike targets in Iran remain on a higher-than-usual alert status. The Pentagon heightened the status 2 weeks ago, and Mr. Trump requested options to respond to the protests. Okay? So we have another aircraft carrier there. We have all these fighter jets, strike aircraft. Everything's all ready to go. And these are our demands. We're telling Iran, you cannot enrich uranium. You have to give up your stockpile of enriched uranium. We are telling them you have to limit the number and range of your ballistic missiles such that they cannot hit Israel. And you have to abandon all your support for every regional group in the Middle East. Now, think about this from Iran's perspective. Israel wants you dead. We, the United States, and Israel have been openly talking about regime change for years. For years. Saying we want to topple their government, we want to reinstall the monarchy, the Shah. Iran's only means of defending itself is its nuclear hedge, its ballistic missiles, which can hit Israel, and its proxies. And we're telling them, if you don't make yourself absolutely defenseless, then we will destroy you. Well, Iran must realize that they will be destroyed regardless. If they give up their centrifuges, their enriched uranium, if they give up their missiles, if they give up their proxies, they are defenseless. They are vulnerable. If they don't have missiles that can hit Israel, then that means Israel can bomb them with impunity. Iran does not have adequate air defense. Iran does not have air superiority. If they don't have the missiles, Israel will control the skies, and that means they can just hit Iran whenever they want, however much they want. Without the proxies, Israel does not have to worry about anything on their border, not on the north with Hezbollah, the south with Hamas, the east with the Popular Mobilization Force. And without a nuke, you can topple the Iranian government and not have any concern about what happens next. Okay, so Iran becomes a failed state. So it balkanizes. So it turns into violent chaos and disorder that lasts decades. Well, as long as they don't have a nuke, not really our problem. So the logic goes. So our demands are that they make themselves defenseless. They will never agree to that. They will take their chances on the battlefield. Because if they don't, well, then now you're really screwed. Now you're up a creek without a paddle. So we're telling them either you give up everything, you render yourself completely vulnerable, or else we go in. Well, what do you think is going to happen here? Iran doesn't trust us. Iran has so far refused to negotiate. Iran will never agree to these terms. And by the way, even if they began to negotiate, once again, I will remind you, there is a third party here that is extremely active. And that third party, Israel, just as they did last year, just as they did in 2024, they will sabotage the diplomacy. So this is what I'm talking about. Ostensibly, we are there doing gunboat diplomacy. Give us what we want or else. Well, that relationship is already impossibly frayed. It is damaged beyond repair. It is irreparably harmed. But even if it worked, even if what Trump was doing could or did work, the Israelis have the final say. They have the ace up their sleeve because they could always sabotage it. So there is such a low likelihood, based on those years of distrust between the leaders of America, the current leaders of America and Iran, based on the years of hostilities, sabotage, subterfuge, openly hostile rhetoric, even if you could overcome it, Israel would still sabotage it with a false flag, with some sort of provocation, with their rhetoric, lobbying. They would find a way to derail it. And that means you think you have a few options. Realistically, you have two. In the end, you have exactly one. They have narrowed the range of options to one course. It is a slit. It is not a double slit experiment. You have one hallway, one door that you can walk through, and that's a war with Iran. That's where we are. And it has to happen quickly. Because what they are telling the United States is that Iran is racing towards a primitive nuclear warhead. It's a matter of time. What they are telling the United States is they are racing towards a newly built ballistic missile arsenal. Israel says that Iran has fully reconstituted its missile program to the same level as it had before Israel went to war with Iran last June. And to top it all off, Netanyahu is making his sixth visit to the White House in February, which is in 2 days. Okay? This is where we are. So I think it is inevitable, it is a certainty that we are going to war with Iran quickly. And they got Trump locked in for 4 years. And it doesn't stop here, even if this one is another one and done. The long-term goal is to topple the Iranian government. This is a terminal regime. It's over. Their proxies are defeated. As a regional power, they are neutralized. Their strategic weapons have been degraded. There is civil unrest. The economy is a failure. And so the United States and Israel are going to once again degrade Iran's defenses. And maybe this will just be the second one. They're going to attack the Internal Security Service so that Iran is vulnerable to infiltration. They're going to attack Iran's missiles so that Iran cannot strike Israel preemptively or otherwise. They are going to finish off the nuclear hedge. And then Iran will be like a lame duck country waiting to be toppled by a color revolution and assisted by the United States. And Israel knows they got two more years with this guy, two more years to make it happen. That's what we got set up for. And it was like that from the beginning. So that's the situation in Iran. You know, we're going to have to save this other story about ICE for tomorrow because we're out of time. It's already midnight. But suffice to say, the United States is now ending its policy of mass deportations. We're opening up a front with Iran. And so what do you say to all of the Trump supporters, the plan trusters, the shills? They said it would be a golden age. It would be different this time. They said we just simply need to trust the plan. They said all you need to do is put your head down and stop worrying and just trust Trump. If Trump is failing, it's only because of a lack of blind faith from his supporters. Well, it is January 29th, 2026. Mass deportations are already over. They never happened. And we are on our way to bomb Iran for the second time. Wow. Who could have possibly predicted it would end up like this? Not like this, Andrew Torba. Do you remember when Andrew Torba was posting every single day? Trump just said something based, and you're blackpilling? Remember that inanity? Do you remember that absolute and utter stupidity? Every single day. Well, you know, Trump said something cool and you're blackpilling. Trump took a fucking picture at McDonald's and you're blackpilling. Hey, wakey wakey, Mr. Torba. Hate to disturb you at this hour on your, you know, pasture-raised egg farm. Hate to disturb you at this time of night when you're sleeping with your trad wife, but we're about to go to war with Iran and mass deportations are over. So what do you have to say for yourself that you were so miserably wrong, so miserably naive and stupid and lacking in foresight? The John Doyles, the AF Post employees, what do they have to say for themselves? You got played. You fell for it. You idiot. I am old enough to remember in 2024 when Trump stood there with Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago, when Trump took a paycheck from Miriam Adelson, when Trump promised to staple green cards to diplomas to David Sachs. And I remember all those people said, oh, that's a throwaway comment. Oh, that's actually what you want to see. Oh, Trump has to do that. He's just playing the game. If you don't think that's acceptable, well, you're not serious. They said, you don't know what it takes. You're not serious enough. That's what it takes to win in politics. They were telling us that like they knew. They said, listen up, we know how politics works. You have to cut a deal with Israel to get your mass deportations. Yeah, well, about that. We're a year in, you've deported 230,000 people, and they're already walking it back. We're a year in, and we're on our way to bomb Iran for the second time. And people are still coping. Making up fake numbers. We actually deported 2 million people. Says who? Says this census survey of 65,000 people with a response bias. Oh. It never ends. And this is why, as I've said for years, I've said it all night, we cannot be these stupid people anymore. You cannot be in league with Barry Weiss. There is no outcome where you win. There is no outcome where Ben Shapiro and Jared Kushner are walking Trump to the Ohel to give his intention at the grave of the Lubavitch Rebbe, and you come out on top. Does that even need to be said? There is no timeline where you see your president wearing a kippah, holding hands with Jared Kushner and Ben Shapiro to put his little note at the grave of Menachem Schneerson. And that is our guy who's going to be Hitler. Not going to happen. If Shapiro thinks he's their guy and you think he's your guy, somebody is wrong. And it ain't Shapiro, okay? If Ben Shapiro thinks that Trump is his guy and, you know, you're a heritage American or whatever, and you think Trump is your guy, one of you is wrong. And it's not the Jew. You want to know why? Because the Jews have Trump's fucking phone number and you have a Twitter account. Never forget that. If Larry Fink, Miriam Adelson, Mark Levin, and Ben Shapiro, if they all think that Trump is their advocate and you think they're wrong, he's your advocate. Here's how you know who's actually wrong. Shapiro, Levin, Adelson, and Fink, they have a personal audience with Trump. They have his phone number. They have an open invite to the White House. You have a Twitter account. You roll out of bed, open up your mobile phone, log on to Twitter, and you post into the void. Trump isn't even there. He's on Truth Social, and it's all filtered through Susie Wiles, a lobbyist from Florida. Okay, does it even need to be said? No, the posters are not in control. The Jews are in control. The posters with their insipid bullshit content are not controlling the White House. The Jews that are at the White House are controlling the White House. Does it need to be said? No, Aiden from AF Post does not outrank Miriam Adelson. Captive Dreamer and Jack Posoba do not outrank Larry Fink and Bill Ackman. They don't. So, you know, you trusted the plan. You fell for it. I told you so. I told you in 2024, the deportations will not happen. A war with Iran will happen. And now all these numbskulls are making excuses. They say, well, we're not really retreating. They say, well, we're not really going to war with Iran, or maybe that's a good thing now. Who even knows? So they say, that's Trumpism. That's your movement. It's a load of crap. So anyway, we're going to move on. We'll take a look at our super chats. It's just so frustrating because I warned everybody this would happen. And all these people that are, I mean, they don't even hold a candle to me. I said precisely all of this 2 years ago. I mean, exactly 2 years ago. To the letter. And people said, don't take him seriously. We know better. We're the serious people. We're the adults in the room. We're going to have sex with Peter Thiel, and we know how it's really going to go down. I'm at Project 2025, and I think that I'm working at Project 2025, and the based people are going to be the chief of staff and run the White House. You were wrong. Eat shit and fucking die. You were wrong. I was right. And now we reap what we sow. MAGA hat is staying on. Don't chimp out. Stay trusting the plan. Stay in line. These people are pathetic. They really think that if you don't complain on Twitter, Trump will improve. They're like, hey, everybody relax. Here's how he can still win. It's like, what do you think this is materially affecting? It actually doesn't matter what you say or do. In the end, those are not the pressures and incentives and considerations that govern the world's most powerful office. So, yeah. Mass deportations, never going to happen. War with Iran on its way. We're going to move on. We'll take a look at these. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. We fixed entropy, so we're good tonight. But, yeah. It's just wild. I mean, I know I keep going on and on, but I can't get it out of my head that, like, how much of a miserable catastrophe is it Let's just go through the list, shall we? I'm really relishing this. This one's for John Doyle. This one's for Andrew Torba. This one's for all you true Goyim. This one is for all you Shabbos Goys who would flip the light switches if it wasn't for you. Who would open the refrigerators? Who would turn the lights on and off? Who would carry water for the Jews that hate us if it wasn't for these useful Goyim? If it wasn't for you, useful idiots. Let's see, what were we promised? In 2024, they said we were going to cut the deficit by $2 trillion. Remember that? Cut the deficit by $2 trillion because we have Doge. It's going to be funny. We're going to move quickly and break things. We're going to bring that private sector mentality to the White House. We're going to cut $2 trillion in waste, fraud, and abuse. Elon Musk, Vivek, Tulsi, RFK, Tucker, Trump are staying alive. Yeah, well, Doge failed after 3 months. And then Elon left the White House ignominiously after cutting nothing. Let's see, what else? Mass deportations. Didn't you see those signs? I mean, look, people at the RNC held up a sign that said mass deportations. It has to happen, right? We've deported 230,000 people. That's fewer than Obama's first year in office. And now they're drawing down the number of ICE agents from Minneapolis. They're going to shift gears and focus on targeted enforcement instead of sweeping raids. House and Senate Republicans back down. They're going to let the Democrats defund DHS to put in place more restrictions. They're leaving Maine. There's your mass deportations. They said that Trump was going to make everything affordable, fix the economy. It's going to be a new golden age. Today, Trump said he wants house prices to keep going up. He said if housing prices go down, it hurts homeowners. So he said it's my job to keep housing prices going up in perpetuity. Houses aren't expensive enough. It just gets better and better. Bitcoin is down 15% over the last year. It just gets better and better. We hit the cap for H-1B visas, 130,000. Trump said, I will end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. Well, it's still going on. He said, I will bring peace to the Middle East. We have another armada off the coast of Iran ready to go. Yeah, there we are. And now what's going to happen? We're setting ourselves up to lose in 28. And you want to know the truth? If the Democrats win in 28, you realize that they are coming back with a vengeance. You do realize that, right? If the Democrats had won in 24, they would be on the back foot. If the Democrats won in 24, let me tell you something. If Biden was succeeded by Harris, she could not, would not, she wouldn't have the political capital to go balls to the wall. The Democrats were already falling apart. Half the country would think the election was stolen. Most of the country would think she's an illegitimate president because she never won a primary ever. She would be a complete disaster. If she went to war with Iran, nobody would support it. Everybody would be criticizing it. Think about how weak a Democrat administration would be this year. But if you elect Trump and Trump antagonizes the left for 4 years, arresting James Comey, arresting Letitia James, arresting all these people, doing all these things, they are coming back with a vengeance. Now they're pissed off. And Trump has alienated the young people, alienated Hispanics, alienated moderates and independents. And he's not going to be on the ballot in 28. This fat, uncharismatic dork who has never been tested, who has never had a job, this goofus, he's going to be the nominee. And Republicans have made sure of it, that there won't even be a competition. They're going to give him the crown and say, good luck. And if this guy cannot rally the Trump coalition, if he shits the bed, we're all screwed. Like, it's over. So, and what good will it have done? People said, well, something's better than nothing. Not really. If we get a Democrat in 2028, is it going to matter that we deported 250,000 people? It's not even a drop in the bucket. Like, think about it. People say, hey, well, it's something. It's better than the alternative. Dude, if we get to 2028 and we've only deported 1 million people, that's not worth it at all. If we get to 28 and we get a Democrat who launches an inquisition, it would not have been worth it to only deport 1 million people. It just wouldn't have been. If we get a war with Iran and no mass deportations, and then we get a Democrat that's going to punish all of us, was that better than nothing? I don't know. I don't think so, actually. But all these people said, hey, don't ask that question. They said, don't entertain the notion. It's unthinkable. They said, don't even entertain the notion that we shouldn't vote for Trump or not trust the plan. I was the only one expressing this. They said, hey, just shut up and vote Republican. That's all you could do. Okay, well, now we're fucked.